Okay, so all right, shall we start with where we left off? Yes, so I was just mentioning that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Vasudev Datta that the two books, Krishna Karnamrita and Brahma Samhita, are being kept with Swarup Damodar, and that he should get them copied. And Vasudev became very glad to hear this. Yes, can we have the next slide, please? प्रत्येक वैष्णव सबे लिखी लइला क्रमे क्रमे दुई ग्रंथ सर्वत्र व्यापिला. Indeed, each and every Vaishnava copied the two books. By and by, the two books, the Brahma Samhita and Sri Krishna Karnamrita, were broadcast all over India. So there you are. So it shows how important this book was. And all the devotees realized its importance because Mahaprabhu emphasized it so much. And they personally copied every single syllable of this text on their own. So they all had a copy of these two books. So therefore, we see when Srila Prabhupada emphasizes, yes, you must read my books, you must read the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. So we needn't copy every book down like the way they did it 500 years ago, but we can certainly at least procure a copy of each book and then read it carefully, in our time at home or wherever else. So the reason I've explained all this and cited all these verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I've given you five references so far, is to emphasize how important and valuable Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered the Brahma Samhita. So, therefore, I would urge everyone to take this book very seriously and not to get too intimidated by the high level of English language that is found in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purports, and also in the very subject matter also, which is quite complex. But I hope that over the next 3 Saturdays, including now, we will try to make the Brahma Samhita as, shall we say, simple and accessible as possible. Okay, so what we'll do now is that, can we have the question? So I don't need the slide for the moment. There were questions, but I can't see the questions, so because it's on the phone, so can somebody just tell me what the questions are, if there are any questions, and I'll answer. Yes. Okay, the answer to that is that first of all, every day in the morning at Brahmasam at the Sringar Darshan, greeting of the deities, at least two of those verses are are heard every day by us. So we do recite at least two verses every single day. And if you go to the temple for the greeting of the deities in the morning, then you will chant them every day. But however, that's only 2 or 3 verses. In many temples, and especially in India, it is a practice to chant the Govindam prayers very frequently. Sometimes in the temple, sometimes the Govindam prayers for a certain period, and then other prayers at other times. So it's a good practice to chant these, at least the Govindam prayers, which are part of the Brahma Samhita, including the first verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna. So if you make that a part of your daily sadhana, and then that would be wonderful. And even if you don't have time to do it every single day, you can do it on a regular basis. Maybe a couple of times a week, or even once a week, if you don't have the time. So that would be a wonderful meditation. Okay, so that's the answer to the question. And I would encourage temples all over to actually introduce the chanting of the full Govindam prayers, not the full Brahma Samhita, not all the 62 verses, but the 28 plus 1 verses of the Govindam prayers. 28 of the Govindam prayers and 1, which is the first verse, Ishvara Paramah Krishna. At least if that is introduced in every community and every temple, that would be very helpful. Okay, the next question, please. Oh, yes. Actually, I was watching a video some weeks ago in which some gentleman, Indian gentleman who was also a doctor, but very traditional, gentleman with a turban and everything. And he was explaining a traditional method of memorization that was taught to him by his father, who learnt it from his father, who learnt it from his father. You know, it had been coming down for many, many generations. And the technique was very simple, that if there was a passage or something that you wanted to memorize, the first thing you had to do was to write it down attentively. Not just casually, mechanically, but attentively write it down with full concentration. And then to recite it very attentively at least 10 times before you went to bed. The last thing that you did before you went to bed, literally. No looking at your messages on the phone and everything. And then once you did that, we would add to say your prayers at night and then go to bed. And keep that particular passage, and we hope that it's something devotional. So then you keep it under your pillow, that sheet of paper or whatever. Not an electronic device, please. Just a sheet of paper or a diary or a notebook that has such passages or verses if you're memorizing them. Keep them under your pillow. And when you wake up in the morning, you say your prayers, the first thing in the bed, and then immediately open up this book or the diary or the sheet of paper and then recite them again 10 times with full attention. Let's say you want to memorize the Govindam prayers and you want to do, let's say, 3 or 4 verses at a time. So write those 3 or 4 verses down on a sheet of paper and then follow this exercise. So writing is indeed a wonderful form of meditation, because all your mind, your senses get absorbed in the subject that you're writing. So therefore we see that in childhood a lot of importance was given to hearing as well as writing. In the earlier days, before Kali Yuga began, and even in Kali Yuga, way before writing began and became the primary means of teaching, students would only hear and they would repeat. They didn't even feel the need to write. Because just by different ways of recitation and very attentive oral reception, they would actually memorize it. But for us, writing is an additional benefit. It's not a substitute for hearing. Recitation and memorization is very important, but writing is a great additional tool that helps. And personally, in my school days, I remember that when I wrote something down, I found it much easier to remember it and understand it And even in my early days in Krishna consciousness, I have books and books of my notes. Because I wrote down things, and I still have books from 30 years ago. Where I had my notes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita or the Bhagavatam, and I would painstakingly write down what I found were the essential points or the main points. And even today, when I have to make notes for lectures, not every lecture I give is prepared, but in many lectures where I do prepare, like I prepared for this seminar, so I have written down my notes. And I find it's useful to preserve for later when you forget also, then you refer your notes. That's one benefit. The other benefit is that when you're writing it down, then you tend to absorb in that. So writing is also a form of meditation. Incidentally, I might mention, many years ago, in one temple where I used to reside, we did an exercise that became quite popular and is done by many devotees even today. By the way, are you all able to hear me clearly? I'm hardly able to hear myself because the sound of the thunder and the rain is so strong outside. So anyway, I'm glad you're able to hear me even though I'm hardly able to hear myself. So what we did was, we had what was called a Harinam bank. A bank, you know, bank just like you have a bank where you deposit money. So what we expected devotees to do was, we gave them free notebooks where the first line was printed with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on every page. And the devotees had to write down the Maha Mantra in each line, below the first line. And they would write the entire notebook like that. And then we would give a prize to whoever had deposited the maximum number of notebooks. So some would come with 1 or 2 or 5 or 10 or 20, 25. And they would sincerely write down it. Books and books filled with the holy names were then deposited. And so we noted that down as their deposit in the Harinam bank. So they became very wealthy spiritually because they filled in books and books of the holy name, writing down personally, because so much energy is involved. You know, you have to focus your mind. Sometimes when you speak it, you can even speak it without consciously being aware of it. And we all have experience of that in our japa. So often we just chant the Maha Mantra mechanically and we don't even really focus on it. But when you're writing down, then you're forced to actually meditate on it. And then what we would do was, how would we deposit these books? So when there was a temple construction or something going on, and we had to do the Bhumi Pujan, and the deity of Anantashesh was placed at the right way below in the pit where the foundation had to be laid, we would also keep these notebooks there. And they would be covered over with mud along with the deity of Anantashesh. So all the books we had collected in the Harinam bank were also kept there. So the holy name would be, so to speak, the foundation of the entire structure. So that is just a little tidbit about writing as a form of meditation. Okay, so there was some other question, I believe. Yeah, wonderful. Could you repeat that, please? In brief, I already mentioned it, and actually we'll be talking about it as we go along in some of the verses. So I'd rather not go into that now, because we'll be dealing with that in detail, especially in one of the verses. So if you can just hold on for some time, for a few Saturdays more, then that's fine. We'll talk about it a lot more. But in brief, it's just that Mahavishnu lies down in his yoga nidra, in his transcendental mystic slumber, which is not like our sleep, and from the pores of his skin emanate the seeds of the universe. As they expand from his body, they get larger and larger, and then Mahavishnu expands himself to enter within each universe as Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. He fills up each universe half, and then he lies down on that, on Ananta Shesha, and then from his navel comes the lotus on whom Brahma is born, and the secondary creation within the universe happens within the stem of the lotus. So that is a brief, very brief description of the creation. Is there any other question? Okay, so let's go on then with the next slide. Yes, so now, having spoken about the importance of the Brahma Samhita and the history of the Brahma Samhita, we've also spoken about how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found a manuscript of the Brahma Samhita, the fifth chapter in Adhikeshav temple. He had it copied, and then he took it back and showed it to the devotees in great jubilation. And in this way, he did a lot of book distribution. So the original book distributor was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who distributed many copies of the Brahma Samhita everywhere, and he had people, his devotees, copy them. So now that we're done with, we've discussed that, now we'll come to the structure of the Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita, or rather the fifth chapter of it, which we will refer to as Brahma Samhita since the other 99 chapters are not available, has 62 verses. And we can divide them broadly into six categories. So in the first category, there's only one verse. That is the first verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna, which we all know, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. So this is in a separate category all by itself, because it is the most important verse of the Brahma Samhita. It is the defining verse, which is called the Paribhasha Sutra. I'll explain that in a few minutes. In the second category, or second division of the Brahma Samhita, we have the verses 2 to 6. So 5 verses which describe in a fascinating way the abode of Krishna, specifically Goloka Vrindavan, and also mentions Krishna as the Supreme Godhead. The third category, texts 7 through 21, speak about the process of creation of the material world. It's again quite fascinating, a little complicated, and it's something that is truly speaking inconceivable. Now, what to speak of the spiritual world being inconceivable? Even the material world itself is inconceivable, and our brains will not be able to sufficiently imbibe or understand the process of creation even of the material world. Every little part of the material world is full of wonder. So, in these few verses here, the process of creation of the material world has been summarized by Brahmaji. After all, Brahma himself is a creator. So, he has also described the process of creation that precedes his birth. There are two types of creation. One that happens at Mahavishnu's level, and subsequently, once Brahma is born and is enlightened with knowledge by Krishna, then he does the work of secondary creation. And there is much that happens after that. So, Brahma, initially in the 7 to 20, verses 7 through 21, we hear about the process of creation before Brahma's birth. Then in text 22 through 28, we see a description of Brahma's birth, and then the austerity that he performed, the meditation that he did, and then his initiation by Lord Krishna himself, and the enlightenment that he obtained as a result of all of this. His austerity, his meditation, his initiation. So it was because of the mercy of Lord Krishna upon him that eventually Brahma became fully enlightened. In the next category, next text 29 through 56, we have the famous Bhaja Govindam prayers. Now all of you know these prayers, you've heard them, and I would recommend this as an important part of your weekly sadhana, at least, if not daily sadhana. And for those who want to meditate on the Lord in different ways, the Govindam prayers are excellent because they cover such a vast array of transcendental topics, which we'll come to shortly, that it is quite amazing. It covers the entire philosophy also. Now, just a small technical point, that when I speak of Govinda prayer, Govindam prayers, it usually ends with the line Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So I offer my respectful obeisances to that Supreme Person, Govinda or Krishna. So this last line appears in all these verses except the very last one. The very last one, 56, is like a concluding verse, so it doesn't have this last line, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. But nevertheless, it is included within the Govindam prayers that we recite. So therefore, I have included that in this section. And we also include verse number 1, text number 1, Ishvara Parama Krishna. So therefore, we have text 1. And then we have 28 verses of the Govindam prayers, 29 to 56. So that makes it a total of 29 verses. So that is the Govindam prayers. And the last section, text 57 through 62, is the concluding portion of the Brahma Samhita, which is Krishna's instructions to Brahma, the concluding instructions. So this is an overall overview, shall we say, of the Brahma Samhita. So now what we will do is to, yes, can we have the next slide? Now you remember that there was one verse in which Prabhupada has spoken about the importance of Brahma Samhita. And in between, I gave you the first line of the purport and the last line of the purport, and I said that in between, Prabhupada has mentioned many, many topics that are covered in the Brahma Samhita. So what we'll do now is that based on that purport, and that purport is Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela chapter 9, I think it's text 240 probably. So I have taken it exactly from the purport. So I've just put them in bullet points. So I'll quickly read them out to indicate what kind of topics have been covered in the entire Brahma Samhita as per Srila Prabhupada's purport. The philosophical conclusion of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, that is, simultaneous oneness and difference. Methods of devotional service. The 18-syllable Vedic hymn discourses on the soul, super soul, fruitive activity, explanation of Kama Gayatri. Explanation of Kama Gayatri has been repeated here. Anyway, Kama Bija, the seed, mantra, Kama, of the Kama Gayatri. The original Mahavishnu. Detailed descriptions of the spiritual world, specifically of Goloka Vrindavan. The demigod Ganesha. Can we have the next slide, please? Garbhotakashaya Vishnu, the origin of the Gayatri Mantra. Yes, the origin of the Gayatri Mantra. The form of Govinda and his transcendental position and abode. The living entities. The highest goal of life. Goddess Durga. The meaning of austerity. The five gross elements. Love of Godhead. Impersonal Brahman. Initiation of Lord Brahma. Vision of transcendental love, enabling one to see the Lord. The steps of devotional service. Can we see the next one, please? The mind, Yoga Nidra, goddess of fortune, devotional service in spontaneous ecstasy, incarnations beginning with Lord Ramachandra, the deities, conditioned soul and its duties, truth about Lord Vishnu, prayers, Vedic hymns, Lord Shiva, Vedic literature, personalism and impersonalism, good behavior, and many other subjects, Srila Prabhupada says. So there are 38 topics specifically mentioned by Prabhupada in the purport, and one other point that says many other subjects. So these are the topics that we will find in the Brahma Samhita. So, quite easy to understand that the Brahma Samhita contains a wide variety of topics on spiritual life. So now what we will do is, we will begin. Can we have the next slide, please? Okay, so now we begin with the actual verses or the texts of the Brahma Samhita. As I mentioned, there are 62, and we'll start now with the first one, and we won't be able to complete the first one today in detail, but we'll just recite it and have some explanation of it and then some questions. And next Saturday when we meet, we will discuss this verse in even more detail, and we'll go verse by verse, and in three Saturdays we will cover all the 62 verses. Okay? So now what I would suggest is that all of you please repeat after me the verses, even though you're muted, but wherever you are, you can repeat this verse. Ishwarah Paramah Krishnah Satchidananda Vigrahah Anadiradir Govindah Sarvakarana Karanam Ishwarah Paramah Krishnah Satchidananda Vigrahah Anadiradir Govindah Sarvakarana Karanam Ishwarah Paramah Krishnah Satchidananda Vigrahah Anadir Adir Govindah Sarvakarana Karanam. So I recited this three times because, as I said, it's the most important verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of the Brahma Samhita. Translation: Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and He is the prime cause of all causes. So this is one of the most famous verses in Krishna consciousness, and it's a very important verse for our understanding. It's easy to memorize and meditate on, and it's an important verse we can use to preach, not only in our classes to devotees, but even if there are other people who are somewhat favorable and would like to hear some important verses, then this is one of those verses. So I would urge all of you, if you already haven't done it, to please memorize this particular verse and to understand its meaning. It's a very simple verse with small individual words that we can break down, unpack easily. Ishwaraha, Ishwara refers to controller. Paramaha refers to supreme. So we all are controllers in our own way, but Krishna, Krishnaha, is the supreme controller, Parama Ishwara. So this verse, the first thing Brahma says in this opening verse is that Krishna is the supreme controller. And Brahma should know what is controlling, because he is the big controller in every universe. Brahma is so intelligent, so capable, so powerful, so dexterous and efficient, we cannot even imagine. You know, it needs so much of technology and brilliance to understand how to build buildings and have the technology and all of that. Imagine building planets, innumerable planets, all with different species and perfect situations for those species to live in and so on. That needs a lot of controllership, a lot of power and intelligence. So Brahma is a very, very powerful controller, as are the big demigods like Surya, Chandra, Indra and so on. But they are very, very tiny controllers in relation to Krishna, who is the supreme controller. So Krishna is not only Ishvara, but he is supreme controller, supreme Ishvara, Parama Ishvara. The second important point that is made here by Brahma about Krishna is that Krishna has a form, Vigraha. And that form is a unique form. It is not like any form that we have experienced within this world. The forms that we experience here are material forms. These material forms are made out of material energy. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And also we have the subtle body made of mind, intelligence and false ego. But Krishna's body is an entirely spiritual body, and there is no touch of any material element or the material energy in Krishna's existence, in his existence or in his form. Rather, his form is made of Sat Chit Ananda. We'll be talking in detail about these things as we go on. Sat refers to eternity or truth. Chit refers to knowledge or consciousness. Ananda refers to bliss. So Krishna's transcendental body, vigraha or form, is constituted of complete, perfect truth or eternity, of full consciousness and knowledge, and complete bliss. This is Krishna's body. We don't have experience of anything like this. Therefore, it's very hard for us to conceive, to conceptualize, to visualize. And the next point is anadihi, adihi, govindaha. Anadi, the word adi indicates origin. Anadi means having no origin. So Krishna is anadi, which means he has no origin, but he is adi. So even though he has no origin, but he is the origin of everything and everyone. Sometimes people ask, okay, God is our origin, who has created God? And the answer is, God is anadi by definition. So he has no origin, but he is the origin of everything. So that is anadi adihi. And his name is Govinda, the lover of the cows, the master of the senses, the master of the cows, or giver of pleasure to the cows and giver of pleasure to the senses. That's Govinda, one of the very important names of Krishna. And very importantly, the last line, which is very easy to know and cite and quote, Sarva Karana Karanam. Sarva means all, everything. Karana means the cause, and Karanam also means the cause of. So, Sarva Karana Karanam means that Krishna is the cause of all causes. He is the Karanam, the cause of Sarva Karana. He is the cause of all causes. He is the prime cause of everything. So when you go back in time, you to identify the ultimate cause of things, you will come to a full stop at some point. Let's say a particular object, let's say this device that you are seeing this program on right now, it had a cause. And this cause had another cause. Let's say this was made from some metal and some plastic and, you know, so on. The physical device, the computer or the telephone or the mobile phone that you're using. So then that plastic came from some chemical factory that itself needed some substances as ingredients. Those substances were obtained from somewhere else. And ultimately they came from the earth. They were minerals or they were mined from the earth. And they were created in the earth also by the interaction of certain elements on the earth's surface. And then the earth itself was caused at some point in time. It was born, it was created and imparted with these elements, primordial elements by which the creation could continue to transform these elements and create coal and metal and so many other things. Then ultimately who caused the earth? And you go back, then you come to Brahma, and you come back to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, then you go back to Mahavishnu, then you go back to Sankarshan, you go back to Vasudeva, you know, Pratyumna, Balaram, you come to Krishna. So ultimately Krishna is the cause of all causes, Sarva Karana Karanam. So this is amongst the most important verses in our Krishna consciousness. So I would urge you to please remember this verse and meditate upon it. Okay, very, very important. By the way, we go on till what time? How much time do we have now? Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Yes, please, go ahead. But when we use the word other, we refer to someone apart from the thing or the person being discussed. So when it is mentioned here that he has no other origin, it indicates that there is no origin outside of himself. So Krishna is his own origin. So Krishna has no origin outside of himself. Krishna has no origin other than himself. So that's a very important point to consider. Our origin is outside of ourselves. Our origin is other than ourselves, someone or something other than ourselves. For example, our origin is our parents, who are other than ourselves. They have a distinct identity, they have a different body, different personality. So they are distinct individuals separate from us. But they are our cause. So we have an origin, an other origin. We have an origin that is separate from ourselves. But Krishna is his own origin. He has no origin separate from himself, although he is the origin of everything. So Adi means he is the origin of everything. Anadi means that he has no origin, and that is elaborated by saying he has no origin other than himself. In other words, he has been eternally existing. There is no point in time that one can say that Krishna never existed. So Krishna has eternally existed, and Krishna, who created Krishna? Krishna created Krishna. But that's a little complicated to understand. Therefore we say he has no cause other than himself. So that's the answer. Okay? Thank you. Is there any other question? No, we can take them now. Well, it's certainly an authorized Gaudiya publication. Srila Narayan Maharaj is a respectable, worshipable Vaishnava. So as Vaishnavas, we definitely respect him. And certainly there will be nothing philosophically wrong in that book. It will definitely give the right conclusions of our sampradaya. So there is no harm in reading that book, certainly. Because it will give us the correct conclusions. At the same time, we have our Brahma, our BBT publications, where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary is found. So, and Prabhupada personally instructed that this should be printed by the BBT. So, we should obtain a copy of that and read that. Also, okay? Yes, because you see, when these were written down, they were also recited. And when it's recited, you can very quickly catch a mistake if it's made. So, because people would hear attentively, so they would catch a mistake. Therefore, Vedic forms of mantra having being recited had many what we would call checks and balances. They would recite in multiple ways. They would memorize in multiple ways, in multiple combinations. I'm talking about the general Vedic tradition of memorizing by hearing. And therefore, If you made a mistake in even one, it would be caught when you recited it in another way. That was when they were hearing, there was no writing. So similarly, when it's written down, then when you recite it or when you speak it out, it will get caught, so to speak, if there is a mistake, number one. Number two, the devotees who copied would have to be very, very careful in copying so that they didn't make a mistake. Despite that, sometimes in some of our scriptures, the physical manuscripts that are available, we do find some slight differences. And you will find that in Srila Prabhupada's comments, for example, that this verse has a different rendition in that edition, and this word appears instead of this word in that edition. So sometimes, and only rarely, very rarely, do such changes in words appear. But then the Vaishnava Acharyas reconcile that, and they explain that properly, even in those very rare cases where these things appear. And ultimately, when a certain version or a reading is spoken of by an acharya, then it is authenticated, it is endorsed. So that is the measure, that is the meaning of that is the way in which the fidelity of the transmission is protected and preserved. Okay? Any other question? You mean, why was he born on top of the lotus flower? Why is Lord Brahma there as a creator at all? And why didn't Krishna just create directly? Is that the question? Okay, number one, because Krishna doesn't need anybody. Krishna is quite competent to do everything and anything himself. At the same time, Krishna acts through his innumerable energies. These energies are personified and they're actually devotees. So Krishna has innumerable devotees everywhere in the spiritual and material worlds. And these devotees wish to engage in serving him in some way. And so therefore, Krishna fulfills their desires by awarding them opportunities to serve him in ways that they fancy, or in ways that they like, or in ways that they can relate to, that are within their propensity. So Brahma is also a servant and a devotee of Krishna, and he has that desire that he wants to be a creator. So his initial devotion was somewhat mixed with the idea that he wanted to be a creator also. So he was given that opportunity to serve Krishna in this way. So it's not that Krishna can't do it himself, but it's just that Krishna wants to engage his devotees, who are very, very large in number, in this task of creation. And that's why he sets up this whole mechanism of the lotus flower and then the Brahma on top of the lotus. And all the planetary systems are actually within the stem of the lotus. So it serves as some kind of a confining space. And the rest of the universe is kind of empty. So that's how it goes. Yes. Now that is the example that in very, very rare cases, when a qualified jiva, a spirit soul, is not available who can occupy the post of Brahma, because Brahma is a post after all, and just like you need to be qualified to become a prime minister or a president, so also someone has to be qualified to become Brahma, and that's a very pious person. So if there is no such pious person available in that universe, then the Lord has to become Brahma in that particular universe. And then after the universe is destroyed, in the next creation, then someone else will come along. So these are extremely rare instances where a person who is qualified is not available. That's all. So it may happen in some universe like that. There are millions and millions of universes in the material world. In any of these universes, at any point, if there is no qualified jiva available, Krishna fills in, so to speak. Okay? So our universe, that didn't happen. Our universe has a qualified jiva, Brahma. So he's the four-headed Brahma. Okay? Yes, Brahma will also have to leave this universe, he will also have to die, but his lifespan is the lifespan of the universe. So Brahma's lifetime is approximately 311 trillion years, and when he dies, the whole universe is destroyed. And if Brahma is a pure devotee, then he goes back to Godhead. If he's not a pure devotee, he also has to take birth again. So remember, there are millions and millions of Brahmas in the material world at any given point in time. Okay? Yes, yes. Yes, there is only one temple that is very well known where Brahma is worshipped, and that is in Pushkar. That's in the Indian state of Rajasthan. There could be other temples of Brahma, but they're not so well known. But the only well known, really famous place where Brahma is worshipped is in Pushkar. And many people go there, those who want to worship Brahma. But Brahma is generally not known to be a devotee as far as the general people are concerned. They just consider him to be a demigod, or they consider him to be the creator. But he's not considered like God in the minds of people, like most people consider Vishnu or Shiva. Or you will have very frequently worshippers of Durga who worship Mother, and for them Durga is supreme. For those who are Shaivas who worship Shiva, for them Shiva is supreme. For those who worship Vishnu, Vishnu is supreme. So generally these three are worshipped as supreme by their respective worshippers. But Brahma generally doesn't fall into that category, because there is not that much glorification of Brahma in the Vedic scriptures. Of course, he does appear when the task of creation comes up, or when some particular demigod, some asura, or somebody else has performed some austerities and wants a benediction, so Brahma does appear on those occasions. But his glories have not been elaborately described in the Vedic scriptures. So he doesn't have that kind of a profile. But for us, he is worshipable because he is the founder acharya of our sampradaya. You know, we are in the Brahma sampradaya. So he's definitely worshipable for us. And we understand he's a very, very exalted devotee. He's had personal darshan of Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha on multiple occasions. He's got his beautiful prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto when he prays to Krishna. He's personally gone to Vrindavan and seen Krishna's glories there. And plus, he's got the Brahma Samhita. So for us, he's worshipable. Yes. Yes, we answered that. This same question was asked by somebody else in the first session. And I answered that Brahma is almost always a jiva. And Lord Shiva is in a separate category. He is neither a jiva nor is he a Vishnu Tattva. He is in a category by himself called Shiva Tattva or Shambhu Tattva. So he's almost Vishnu Tattva, but not quite. And Brahma is almost always a jiva, but as I mentioned earlier, in very, very rare cases where no qualified jiva is available, Krishna, the Brahma, may be a Vishnu Tattva, but that is extremely rare. Okay? Not necessarily. One generally, as per the Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's purports therein, and in the other scriptures as well, if one perfectly follows the Varnashrama Dharma for 100 lifetimes consecutively, 100 lifetimes, no less, then one can become a Brahma. Of course, a devotee may become a Brahma if he wants to, but he wouldn't, generally they don't. So this is the situation with, so the qualification is extremely high. So 100 continuous lifetimes following Varnashrama perfectly. And one doesn't have to be a pure devotee for that. And therefore we find, as we've mentioned earlier also, that some Brahmas are devotees but some are not. They may be jnanis, they may be yogis, they may be karmis, even that's rare again. Okay? So your question is more a question of anatomy and physiology, I think. You're asking, just like we have lungs and we have a stomach and intestines and we have a heart, physical heart, and pancreas and liver and all of that. So does Krishna have all of these? Does he have a physical heart? I think that's what you want to ask, right? In his spiritual body. Well, you see, when we speak of heart and Krishna's heart and even our heart in devotional terms, we're not speaking of an anatomical, physical object, the heart. That is a physical substance that is responsible for circulating blood within our body. So when we speak about, you know, my heart is overwhelmed with emotions, we're not speaking about the physical heart. Right? Although emotions may have an impact on the physical heart, if there's a great shock or something, people may die of a heart attack. Sometimes if there's too much of good news, they may also die of a heart attack. You know, people have died when they won lottery tickets. People have died when their favorite team has lost a football match or something. So, the condition of the mental heart or the emotional heart does have an impact on the physical heart, but In devotional terminology, we are not so much concerned with the physical heart. So when we use the word heart in our discourse generally, we refer to the emotional side, the side of spiritual sentiment, of the bhava, the mood. Right? That's what we refer to. So Krishna's body is completely spiritual, and when we talk more on this subject next time, we'll understand more from the perspective of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and also Jiva Goswami, what exactly it means. So Krishna's body is entirely spiritual. There is no difference between his within and without. You know, we have distinctions. Our soul is different from the body, but Krishna's soul is not different from Krishna's body. His body is all soul. And plus, our senses cannot perform the function of other senses. We can't eat with our eyes, but Krishna, the senses of Krishna's transcendental body can perform the function of any other sense of Krishna's body. So Krishna can eat with his eyes. So that is what it means to have a spiritual body. Okay? Now, Krishna, and so we'll discuss more of this. It'll all become clearer when we've been through it next time. Okay? So Krishna's form is human-like, but Krishna's form is not human. Because Krishna is forever transcendental. Okay? Okay. Yeah, sure. Hare Krishna. You are muted. Okay. Now, the first and most important thing to note is that Krishna's body is never material. This is the most important principle of Bhagavad Gita when we start studying it, that Krishna's body is always spiritual. Satchidananda Vigraha, in the verse that we just read today, this is a crucial point to see. And there is not a slightest tinge of matter in Krishna's body. So when Krishna comes, as Bhagavad Gita says, he comes in his own self-same transcendental body. For the duration that he performs his pastimes here, he does so with his self-same original spiritual body. And when he departs, he also departs with his self-same original spiritual body. At no point in time does he have a material body. Okay? But, and this is the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam which we all accept as the absolute truth. However, for the sake of atheists and the faithless, if Krishna desires, he may leave behind material replicas of his original transcendental form for the sake of bewildering such people who are not devotees. Such a thing may happen. For example, we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita that Ravana did not actually kidnap the original Sita, he kidnapped an illusory form of Sita, a Maya Sita. Because Sita is completely spiritual, and an asura or a demon like Ravana can possibly not have access to pure transcendence. So he could never have physically touched Sita. So like that, and just as Sita can manifest an illusory form, Krishna, if he wishes, for the sake of bewildering the atheistic people, manifests such a material form if he wants. And therefore you have all those pastimes that are of Krishna's disappearance that are there, that Krishna was lying down under a tree, and then a hunter came, Jara, and he shot an arrow, and the arrow struck the toe of the Lord, and that's why he passed away or he died, and so on and so forth. But Krishna doesn't die, even the soul doesn't die, so how can Krishna die? Krishna left out of his own sweet will. And this pastime of the hunter shooting an arrow is just a pastime, it's just that. Krishna, for the sake of bewildering the faithless people of this world, orchestrates some pastimes which appear to be human-like. So people can relate to them and they think of Krishna as just one of them, one amongst them. But it is only the faithful devotees who hear in parampara, in the bona fide disciplic succession, can understand actually what has happened. So that's the first point. The second point in connection to what has happened, or the tradition that is followed in Orissa, in Jagannath Puri, for the Navakalevara ceremony, in which Jagannath's, Baladev, Subhadra, the deities are changed, and the old deities are buried, placed in samadhi, so to speak. That is a kind of a bhava, it is a kind of a mood. It's not the physical heart or something like that. It is just that because the wood has now become very old, and wood doesn't have a very, very long life, it can't last centuries and centuries. In some cases it may, but generally these deities will change at certain times. 12 years, 13 years, 19 years, etc., depending on certain astrological or astronomical conjunctions. Okay? So, at the time when... Yeah, so anyway, that's a separate topic, I won't get into it. So, when the deities have to be changed, then the devotees of Jagannath have a certain mood, have a certain bhava. That now we are, so to speak, retiring the Lord, and therefore the Lord had kindly entered into wood, Daru Brahma. Daru means wood, and Brahma refers to the Supreme. So the Supreme has out of his mercy on us, appeared, entered into wood. And then he has, the wood has become non-different from him. And now when the time comes to change the deity, then the Lord kindly exits from that and then enters into the new deity that is being made for him. So that is a whole big subject. Deities that are of stone, for example, have survived for thousands of years. Even today there are many temples where there are deities dating back to thousands of years ago. But when it comes to Jagannath, because the deity is made of wood, so this particular unique tradition has been established there for millennia. So therefore, the transference, so to speak, is done from the heart-to-heart transfer. And Jagannath then now manifests in himself into the new deity that has come in. Actually, even in ordinary deities of, let's say, stone or mud or anything else, there is a prana pratishtha ceremony that is done. Prana pratishtha means where the deity is infused with life, with the Supreme Lord entering in, by the chanting of mantras, by the devotees invoking the presence of the Lord, and very kindly the Lord satisfies his devotees and enters into that stone, that piece of stone, and then that is no longer just stone. After the prana pratishtha, the Lord is considered, the deity is considered directly the Supreme Lord, and not just stone. So that is the way the prana pratishtha is done. So similarly in Jagannath Puri for the deities, this is a form of prana pratishtha. Rather than invoking the presence of the Lord to descend directly, here Jagannath is already there. He enters from one deity into another deity. That is basically what happens over there. Okay? Okay. Okay. Hare Krishna. So I think, what is the time? Do we have time for one more question? Okay. So probably we will wait till next time now, since they haven't asked. It's almost time now. So I'll just recap what we've done so far. I spoke about, first of all, the importance of the Brahma Samhita. It's important for us to study this. I mentioned the various reasons why any text is considered important, and I related that to the Brahma Samhita with respect to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Acharyas, and the contents of the text itself being in line with the transcendental conclusions of the Lord and the Acharyas. Secondly, I spoke the history of the Brahma Samhita in terms of how it was compiled by Brahma at the maturity of his spiritual realization. Then I spoke about how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita, a manuscript, when he was in Adikeshava temple in South India. Then I spoke about the structure of the book, Brahma Samhita, 62 verses, and there were 6 divisions. There's no hard and fast divisions. These are just divisions that devotees have kind of made. And then we also spoke from Srila Prabhupada's purport, in which he enumerates the various topics that have been covered in this book. And finally, we just began our verse-by-verse discussion by reciting the first verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna, of the Brahma Samhita. We read the translation, had a brief explanation of it, and there were questions. So we will continue with the first verse on next week, and in 3 Saturdays we will cover the 62 verses of the Brahma Samhita in brief. Okay, so we'll end here, I think. So it's right on time. We are at 5:30 my time. Yes. Hare Hare. Thank you. No, the problem Krishna Keshav Prabhu, it was at my end. We had a thunderstorm here and that's disrupted all the internet connectivity and everything. So, yes. Everything was okay at your end. Hey, thank you, Krishna Keshava Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And we will see you next Saturday. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Done? There's a law called Murphy's Law, you know, no? If something has to go wrong, it will go wrong. So, of all days, today there had to be a thunderstorm and everything. Yeah. Maybe a thunderstorm like anything. Yeah, it is okay, except for one or two minor spelling mistakes, but yes, it was okay. So you convey my thanks to Archana, and yes, very well done, and that I will give her sometime in midweek some more things to do. So, yeah. Right? Okay, thank you, and sorry to bother you in the midst of all this. Rush for the Rath Yatra. What to do? What's tomorrow?
Rath Yatra.
No, no.
So, should we have class in the morning or? Because Maharaj, I don't know. Considering this thing, will we have a pandal program?
Yeah.
If you give a Bhagavad Gita class in the morning, at least you can attend. I'll discuss the temple management and the festival continues.
Yeah. So I won't give Bhagavatam.
So suppose if we had to.
The procession itself. The forecast says no rain tomorrow, day after, but no forecast.
I don't know why they don't get it right abroad. They're always right
with their forecast. Why are they not able to get it?
Forecast for us for growing. Now it says when it was raining, they checked the forecast for tomorrow, and today it says it will rain in 3 minutes.
Oh, sorry.
Man, it's such a long time.
3 hours, no?